This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. What happens if the three biggest arteries in the leg are unexpectedly severed? Usually, the blood loss is so quick and severe that it can lead to death. And yet, that's exactly what happened to Transit Officer Richard Donahue when a bullet tore through his thigh during the Watertown shootout between police and the Marathon bombing suspects. But Richard Donahue is expected to make a full recovery. Common Health co-host Carrie Goldberg joins us now to explain. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Meghna.
So Officer Donahue, we heard at one point in time, lost, quote, nearly all his blood due to the severity of his injuries. What does that mean?
Well, it was explained to me by Dr. Alfred Sacchetti, who's the spokesman for the American College of Emergency Physicians, that when people say that, they don't mean that you lost all your blood at the scene, because if you had lost the 5 liters of blood that there are in your body on the sidewalk, then you would die. You would die right then. What it means is that you got injured, you lost a lot of blood, they got you to the hospital, and they began replacing your blood.
But nevertheless, massive blood loss can be a catastrophic injury that used to cause patients to spend at least weeks in intensive care.
That's right. I spoke to Dr. Daniel Dante Ye, who's a trauma surgeon at Massachusetts General Hospital, who treated some of the bombing victims. And he explained that there have been a couple of major advances in how we treat blood loss. One is that the practice used to be to really flood patients with a whole bunch of salt water into their arteries and veins so that it would keep their blood pressure up. It would kind of keep their pipes open. And now it's been figured out that, in fact, it's good to minimize the amount of salt water to the extent that you can that's pumped into patients. And then the other really interesting change is that because of practices that developed in blood banking, it used to be that patients would mostly be given just the red blood cells, which can be kind of compared to the skim milk in a pitcher of milk. And they would get much, much, much less of the platelets and the proteins, the plasma that we can kind of think of as the fatty part of the milk, the sort of the extra creamy part of the milk. And there's been this sort of big medical corrective over the last few years in which they've rejiggered the formula of what patients usually get.
And how did this corrective come about?
Well, so that's the interesting part, is that it really seems to have been a transfer of knowledge from military experience into the civilian sphere. It's stuff that we learned in, particularly in the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts of the last decade or more.
Okay. Carrie, let's bring another voice into this conversation, someone who has direct experience in this matter. He's Joseph Blansfield. He's the trauma program manager at Boston Medical Center and a former chief nurse at a combat support hospital in Iraq. He served in Mosul, Tikrit, and Al-Anbar province. Joseph Blansfield, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So, Carrie just talked to us about how the treatment for massive blood loss has changed, and that a lot of these advances came from experience that you, for example, directly had in Iraq. So can you explain to us a little bit more about how, say, the new way of transfusing blood actually works, or what did you do for some of the Marathon victims?
Well, the first tenet of resuscitation for trauma victims is to stop the bleeding. So we want to plug the hole before we can fill the tank. And, for example, the MBTA officer that you referenced, if he was bleeding as dramatically from his leg, that could easily be controlled with hemostasis, pressure, and specifically a tourniquet. Mm. So if we start the resuscitation before we stop the bleeding, we are really not really getting anywhere.
Right, because it just continues to bleed out.
Correct.
So let me ask you, though. I thought at one point in time tourniquets had sort of fallen out of favor as an emergency treatment.
Well, tourniquets did get a bad rap. Our military has the opportunity to learn on the fly, and because of our experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan, we did see a lot of devastating extremity injuries, and it was proven that tourniquets can be lifesavers and were a difference maker for us, and so that has percolated back into the civilian experience. They got the bad rap because way back in earlier conflicts, perhaps World War I, they were left on for way too long. They were left on for a week or more before they were removed, and unfortunately, the affected extremity was gangrenous, and therefore people overreacted and said tourniquets are bad, and they fell into disfavor, but now we've learned since then.
And Joe, are the tourniquets especially good if it's a very low injury, as many of these were?
I don't think it matters. I think any extremity injury that has frank bleeding and demonstrated by the patient being hypotensive or having a low blood pressure would warrant a tourniquet. Mm. But we have to be careful in that it has to be applied by a person that knows what they're doing. So someone should really be trained, and they really need to be monitoring that extremity and monitoring the patient's response to that intervention. Mm.
So once medical professionals or knowledgeable people who are applying first aid are able to plug the hole, so to speak, as you said, what are the particular advancements that came out of combat medicine in Iraq and Afghanistan regarding the actual blood that's transfused into these patients?
For good or for bad, we had the unfortunate circumstances of having several episodes where we had multiple casualties simultaneously, and we had a finite amount of blood bank with a limited resupply chain. So we would on occasion exhaust our blood bank, and our standard procedure was to announce over the public address system to the entire forward operating base that the hospital needs an emergency blood drive. And so people would literally get out of their racks, they would line up, roll up their sleeves, and we would have an impromptu blood drive. We would take their fresh whole blood, and we would administer that fresh whole blood to our casualties, and the results were astounding.
What difference did it make, and how quickly did you see that difference?
In some cases, we would see it before the operations were finished. And certainly in the intensive care unit, when patients were being recovered, that some of the wounds that they had would stop bleeding or would at least bleed substantially less, such that they were able to, recover. And we also saw respiratory problems that might happen as a result of overzealous fluid administration didn't occur when we gave patients minimum amounts of the normal saline and greater amounts of the fresh whole blood. So it was a real difference maker. It got everyone's attention, and the thought was, well, we must be onto something.
Mm-hmm. Joseph Blansfield, so that's how it worked while you were at a combat hospital in Iraq. How did it work at Boston Medical Center? Because you have an established blood bank there, which the blood had already been typed and crossed. What exactly did you do in the civilian setting in the aftermath of the marathon bombings?
So if I'm at Boston Medical Center today, and I called the blood bank and I asked for a unit of fresh whole blood, they'd be laughing hysterically. I could hear them three buildings away. It's just not common practice today because blood is such a scarce commodity and so important for so many patients for so many purposes, it gets fractionated into multiple components. So the best thing we can do is to simulate and give the patients back what they're losing. The two most important things you want to put in a patient's vein are agents that either carry oxygen and clot blood in a trauma situation. So the red blood cells carry the oxygen, and the plasma helps to clot the blood. So we give a component therapy now where we give a recipe of every unit of packed red blood cells we give. We also give a companion unit of thawed plasma. And so it's not as ideal as fresh whole blood, but it still accomplishes what we're after, which is to carry oxygen and clot blood.
So, Joseph Blansfield, my last question for you, I guess, is that you were in Iraq between 2006 and 2007, and here we are in 2013, so merely 6 years later. Are you surprised at the speed of the advancements that were made in combat medicine have come into the civilian sphere?
So I think that we're getting smart, and we're smart on the fly. So this is the first time in our nation's military history that we, in fact, are collecting real-time data on all of these experiences, and we're channeling them to one location down at the Institute of Surgical Research at Fort Sam Houston. They're actually taking a lot of that data, making clinical practice guidelines, and pushing them back out to the combat theaters and saying, this is what we've learned is working. Those are actually all available online now to civilian facilities, and so we used them actually on Monday on the marathon. So I called up some of these clinical practice guidelines, printed them out, pushed them all out on amputations and debridement of war wounds. And so I think that ability to react on the fly was one of the contributing factors which why there was such a small loss of life. So it's very exciting in that regard to be able to, unfortunately, have this terrible learning lab, but to exploit it for the greater good.
Joseph Blansfield, trauma program manager at Boston Medical Center and also former chief nurse at a combat support hospital in Mosul, Tikrit, and Al-Anbar province. He served in Iraq in 2006 and 2007. Mr. Blansfield, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health Blog. Always great to have you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Meg.
And listeners, you can read Carrie's original post about advancements in the treatment of massive blood loss at commonhealth.wbur.org. In a moment, beware those spreadsheet errors. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.